Okay, so today I want to discuss two things. First is generalities about continuation principle. So once more, I have S is a complex, connected complex variety. And I have now vector space F. And I'm looking at solutions of some system of linear equations. So I have system of linear equations which depends on parameter S. So it means that it is a collection of vector spaces W kappa, collections of morphisms mu kappa of S F W kappa, and collection of vectors W kappa of S in W kappa. And I assume that these morphisms homomorphically depend on kappa, and these vectors homomorphically depend on kappa. And they consider solution of this system psi S is a set of all vectors V in F such that mu kappa S V is equal to W kappa of S all kappa. That's some simple-minded notion, and just solutions of equation which depend on parameter S, and I assume that this dependence is homomorphic. And I would like to say something about these solutions. So first, I want to just to make a short digression about what is homomorphic family of parameters, family of operators. The reason is that in infinite dimensional case, somehow things which we got used to in finite dimensional sometimes don't work. But it turns out that for homomorphic families, in fact, everything works perfectly. Yeah. So, namely, suppose I have vector spaces F and W, and they have family of operators mu s from F to W. What does it mean that it's homomorphic on S? So definition the family mu of S. So these are continuous operators, these are locally convex topological vector spaces. Mu of S is homomorphic on S. In S, if for any vector V in F and any covector psi, any linear function on W, the function S goes to F mu of S V is homomorphic. In S. So this is just a weak definition of homomorphy, and the idea is that for it turns out that for homomorphic functions, weak definition and strong definitions are all given. That's somehow some help for us. So proposition. Suppose I have three spaces W and G. They have family mu of S and family lambda of S. So suppose mu of S and lambda of S are holomorphic. Then the composition lambda of S, nu of S is also holomorphic in S. So that's the first property which we'll use. Okay, so and the proof is such thing, for instance, is not true for continuous families. But for holomorphic families, it is true. For holomorphic families, it is true because, so let me indicate the proof very shortly, that we'll consider family lambda s on mu of t in two variables. And then it's easy to see that this variable, this thing will be holomorphic in each of variables s and t. For each fixed s, it is holomorphic in t. For each fixed t, it is holomorphic in s. And then there is general theorem, which tells that if you have a function which is holomorphic in each variable, then it is holomorphic. So this is the proof of this statement. And another property which we will use of holomorphic maps is the following proposition. So suppose that F and W are Banach spaces. Mu of S, F of W is the holomorphic family of the derivatives. So then the claim is that it's continuous and moreover it has Taylor expansion. Then near point S naught, it has a Taylor expansion. Sum A alpha S minus S naught. The alpha sum of monomials where A alpha sum operators from here to here, and this sum is absolutely convergent in some neighborhood of S. So it means that this weak notion of holomorphy implies the strongest possible notion. And so this will be used later. Okay, I will leave it as an exercise. Okay, and now in fact what we will be dealing with, so in our case we have, for instance, family of spaces Vs which depends on parameter S. So these are, I remind you, these are functions of homogeneous degree S minus 1. So in some sense these are all different spaces, they are not isomorphic. Not the same space. So it means that in fact what we have some vector bundle, infinite dimensional vector bundle over space S. And this is, the claim is that this is holomorphic vector bundle. So what does it mean? It means that locally we can trivialize this vector bundle and just say that all the spaces are the same. And in this case, for instance, I think last time, we do it by identifying this as space of C infinity S1. Restricting all functions to the circle, we identify each of these spaces with the same space. So in some sense, philosophically correct thing is to consider this as a holomorphic family vector bundle, but technically just to decrease amount of notations, I will assume that I usually will trivialize the bundles, you know, the bundle is trivial. So you have just one space. Okay, so now continuation principle is concerned with this system of operations. So I remind that continuation principle is the following statement. Suppose I have such system of equations which depends on parameter s, and suppose I know two properties. First, that there exists a neighborhood of some point such that for S in SE, there exists a solution. SE means S existence, and second, there exists a neighborhood SU, S uniqueness of some point, such that for S SE, there exists no more one solution. One means not one up to scalar, but just actually one solution. S. So then, the principle is that, so it's principle because somehow it's like Lesch's principle, because it holds very often. But each time, of course, you have to prove it holds. So then, there exists a proper closed analytic subset. Exceptional subset, TS. Such that on the complement for S, which lies the complement S minus T, there exists exactly one solution. V of S. And this solution is holomorphic in S. Function S, not holomorphic, S to V of S is a meromorphic function on S. So, which means that in the neighborhood of any point of S, you can multiply it by holomorphic function, so it becomes holomorphic. Okay, so this is a principle. Now, in order to make it a theorem, so it is a theorem if you impose some additional condition in our system. So let me define this additional condition, this definition. So I have system sigma S, and I have solutions of CDNS, subset of solutions in V for every S, in F for every S. So definition says that system of equations sigma S is of finite type. If there exists a finite dimension space, complex space L, and the family of morphisms, a holomorphic family, of morphisms, mu of S L into F, such that for all S, image lambda of S of L contains solutions of psi S. So in other words, this means that solutions of our system have some a priori finiteness in them. We have we can embed them in maybe large but some finite dimension space. So this is formal definition, and that's one, and psi S is of locally finite type if locally in S, S it is of finite type. Okay, and now the proposition is that lambda, excuse me, lambda S, just lambda S. This is definition. Sigma S is called system of locally finite type. Locally finite type. If locally in S, it is a finite type. So every point has a neighborhood, such that in the neighborhood of this point, it is finite type. So in other words, that for every point S, I can find neighborhood, I can find finite dimensional vector space, and I can find holomorphic family of morphisms defined in this neighborhood, which contains image, contains all solutions of my system. But this thing will be different. So for instance, dimension of this space may jump, but it will jump when I move, when point S moves. So this is typical, for instance, for standard case for SL2, when S is complex plane. So when I move it, when for instance I go to some integral points, then usually neighborhood of integral points, and somehow I should choose L of dimension approximately to this integer. So it will be different space. So locally it is finite dimension, but I cannot choose one dimension which will fit all points. This is standard for representations of SL2R. System of representations, we know that you cannot have finite number of K types which will somehow mark all representations, but locally in S you can always do it. That's the same type of phenomenon. So proposition is that if psi S is a system of locally finite type, then continuation principle holds. Okay, so in some sense I mostly would like to leave it as an exercise. I just explain, in some sense explains the idea of the proof. The idea of the proof is that first case of finite type. It means that I have morphism into F such that lambda SA contains solutions of psi S for all S. First, I can make reduction to the case when L is embedding. I can assume that L is embedding. So how I do it? I just look at what is the maximal rank of this morphism. I find the point S0 in S such that rank of lambda of S0 is equal to k is maximum. I find subspace L prime in L of dimension k such that lambda of S naught of L prime is equal to lambda of S naught of L. So then it's clear that on some neighborhood of this is not more precisely on the large neighborhood, meaning complement to some proper analytic subset, we'll have that image lambda of S of L prime will be equal to lambda of S of L for S in large set. And that's first and second lambda S L prime into F is an embedding. So hence we can replace our space L by this space L prime, and it is easy to check that it's enough to check for this case. So this will be step one, reduction to case when lambda of S is an embedding. Okay, now step two is reduction to case when F is finite dimension. Namely, the idea is that we can replace our can replace F by L and morphism mu of S by composition. studio now look for vectors in L, which are mapped into solutions. So they will be also solutions of the linear equations. So hence, this will reduce everything to the case when L is finite dimensional. And now, in case of finite dimensional, this essentially follows from the whole continuation principle is trivial, essentially follows from Cramer's rule for solution of a system of linear equations, because we have some infinite system of linear equations in finite on finite dimensional space, but it's clear that instead of this infinite system, we can consider just finite system, which is you can choose from this equations, just equations in the number which is equal to the dimension of f, and after this we just solve this equation by Cramer's rule, and this immediately implies continuation principle. Okay, I think that I will leave the rest as an exercise. And so, so I formulated this continuation principle, and now I want to apply it to in general. So if I have so now the idea will be the following: if I have something which depends on parameter s, in our case u of s, then in order to show meromorphic continuation of this guy, I can use the following thing. I should write down some system of linear equations for u of s, and this after this I should check three claims. First, that the system first that psi s is of locally finite type. So technically, it will be probably the most difficult because it will require some estimates. Second, that somewhere this system has solutions. In some area, in some domain, the system has solutions. And third, which in high dimensional case will be the most interesting combinatorially and philosophically, is that somewhere there is no one solution. There is uniqueness, which means that there is no more than one solution. But what's important is that these three things will be to a large degree separated. You should separately show that the system is locally finite type. You should separately show there is some area where it has no more than one solution. Separately should show that this solution, in our case, this solution will be given by convergent power series. And then this would imply that for almost all s, u of s has unique solution, u of s, and this solution is meromorphic in s. So this is general. Okay, so now I want to write down what is system of equations in our case, and I also wanted to make one semi-philosophic, mathematical remark. So the technically on the level of estimates. Okay, technical, we'll see that on the level of estimates, the most difficult part is this one. But just technically, it's, I want to explain that it's in fact not really very interesting part. The really interesting part is C, but for SL2 it is rather simple. So, but about first part, that sigma S is of locally finite type, so what does it mean? It means that essentially, so that, so locally our space lies in some, in image of some finite dimensional space. It means that for every S, it lies, our solutions of our system lie in some finite dimensional vector space. And the claim is that, for instance, for the space of automorphic forms, it was known long ago that, Langlands proved it, that automorphic functions of a given type, there is finite dimensional space of these automorphic functions. And metamathematical remark is that this is essentially what he proved. So it is not precisely the same, because it should show that not only that it's finite dimensional, but somehow it lies in finite dimensional space, which holomorphically depends on S. But the idea is that any proof which gives you finite dimensionality, more or less automatically will give you something more, namely it will give you this. So in some sense, metamathematically, this statement is just a statement that this system has, that its solution for every S, its solutions lie in finite dimensional space. So for technically it's not true, and moreover, it is the proof that it's holomorphically depends on S is unpleasant and technical, but so to say, if in some problem you manage to show that it's finite dimensional for every S, so you can be assured that everything is okay. Okay, so now let's go to our space. So in our case, so you can see the case which is here, so it's one contains gamma. So you can see the space X. I can see the f of x model, the space of functions of model growth on x. So I will try to formulate precisely what is this. And now I consider the following space. F is consider all morphisms of C, continuous morphisms from the space V S to F of X. So this will be my space F. So now what does it mean? That these spaces V S, they depend on S, but as I explained, I will identify all the spaces V S are all identified as some space epsilon that V, which is C infinity S1. So literally, so in order to make space independent on S, I consider just space of morphisms over C space V into F of X. So this is my space. Now I'm looking for elements E of S are some special elements in this space. That means that this for every S, I want to construct some special morphism from V into F of X. And what are conditions of this morphism? What are linear equations? So I want to construct system of equations which consists of two parts. First part consists of homogeneous equations, mu one S is that E of S V S into F of X moduled is G equivalent. first condition. And the second condition is normalization condition. So this normalization condition follows from geometric theorem which we discussed last time. Namely, it is the following. We have morphism constant map from functions of x, functions on xb. And I have canonical morphism is from vs to xb. And then equation on E of S is that if I consider composition of constant term with E of S, it will be a morphism. So composition right here. So composition of constant term with E of S is a morphism from Vs to functions on xb. So xb, I remind that it's essentially R2 minus 0 moduli plus minus 1, which you can forget just. So composition of these two things gives morphism from Vs, which is space of homogeneous functions, of this space into space of all functions. And so the condition is that if I take this morphism and subtract standard embedding, okay, so then this is this operator Q commutes with M. Or in other words, the image of this operator will consist of will be contained as a space of functions holomorphic of degree minus. So it will contain a space V minuses. So this is normalization equation. And now the claim is that this system of equations satisfy all these three properties. So first of all, it is of locally finite type. It has somewhere solutions. And there is uniqueness, there is some subset where this solution is unique. And for this reason, these solutions which we have somewhere, which are given by convergent Eisenstein series, they have meromorphic information to the whole plane. Minus IS. So this is, so I consider morphisms from VS into functions on XB. M is homotetia. In this case, just homotetia. So since on Vs, homotetia x by this character s minus 1, so that on the image it will act, m will act with homotetia s, so that on the image it will act with homotetia minus s. So which means that image will contain the space of functions of functions with minus s minus 1. Okay, so so this is how we prove it, and next topic will be I should explain what is the space of functions of moduli Gross. Okay, should. So in order to show that the system is of locally finite type, I should use Fredholm theory. It means that I should know that some operators are compact. So I should do some analysis in this space of functions of f of x. And what is? Yes, E of S is a solution. So in this case, this E of S is a solution of our system. E of S is solution system EOFS. So system EOFS tells us, so EOFS is some special vector here in morphisms of space V into F of X. It is some topological vector space. It satisfies the following properties, which depends on S. First of all, on this space. So I identified all the spaces here as V, but action of G will depend on S. So under this action of G, this morphism should be G equivalent. That's the main condition. Plus some normalization conditions that if I make this morphism composite with constant term, then it will be essentially a standard embedding of V of S into functions on XP. Plus functions which are of different type, which are of different homogeneity. So precise statement is that if you just consider the difference of these two morphisms, then this image of this thing will lie in functions of homogeneity minus S. Once more, this is normalization condition. It is needed in order to make our function unique. And this condition will so it will show that locally finite type is given by this condition. The solution of this system of equations is of locally finite type. This is homogeneous system of equations. It will show that solutions of this system lie in finite dimensional space, which changes nicely. Now, for almost all S, in fact, in this case, this solution of the system will be one dimensional. So, but okay, but I prefer to prove it in this way that I say I impose some additional normalization condition. So this equation is already not homogeneous. You can see that it's exactly equation of the type before that E of S is some linear operator of E of S is equal to something. So it's not homogeneous equation, and it uniquely fixes E of S on this line. So in fact, what's going on is that for almost all S, this will be just a line, and we just this condition just fixes the vector on this line. Because in continuation principle, it's important that for the existing domain where for every S you have just one solution, not one scalar, but just one solution without normalization. So we have to add this condition. So this condition has nothing to do with locally finite type. Locally finite type will follow just from the properties of atomorphic properties. That this has so there are two parts. So the second part has nothing to do with locally finite type. So the solution, the claim is that the solution, if I consider this first system of equations, sigma 1, first, then the solution, and that's what I will prove, will be of locally finite type. And I added the second one in order to have normalization and to have uniqueness. So for almost all S, for some area of S, I have solution. Okay. So okay, so now in order to prove all these things, think I should now describe analysis on this domain X. And as often in analysis, you can work in different with different normalizations. So for instance, when you find Schwarz space of the line, you can use L2 normalization, you can use bound function normalization. You can consider, for instance, functions which after application of any differential coefficients are bounded, or functions which are after application of any differential coefficients line L2. And somehow everybody knows that L2 is more correct picture. But often, nevertheless, people often use CN just because it's easier to say things. So in this case, I will use some kind of L2 picture. So, namely, I want to give some general. Suppose I have G is some legal topological. Suppose X on X, which is homogeneous space. In fact, we'll consider the case when it has finite number of orbits and mu is in the expression. So then I would like to consider weighted the spaces, namely weight is a positive function W on X, which satisfies some property which I described in a moment. And what I want to consider, I want to consider space LW, which is L to X is weight W minus 1 of dx. This will be my scale of spaces. Now, in order to have action of the group W on this space, I should impose some condition on W, namely condition will be the following, that weight is a positive function X satisfying the following condition. So let B and G be ball. So ball for me will be just open compact neighborhood of identity, and I always assume that B is equal to B minus 1. Every ball is symmetric, just simplifies all the formulas. So then I want W of Gx is less than equal constant times W of X for G and B, X and X. So exists constant such that this condition holds. So now this, when I move my X by elements of this ball, then W changes by small amount. And since B is symmetric, if I move it, it changes. So we see from here also that we have that it's more equal to C minus 1 W. Here it is less or equal, and here is more equal. because of symmetry of the ball. So in other words, it is these two functions after shift. Okay, so you have this kind of equivalence. In particular, we see that in this case, I have a representation phi w g in the space L w is it's not a unitary representation, but it is a continuous representation. Okay, so and now I will when I go make an analysis, I will work with this kind of spaces. There is some small trivial point that from the beginning I haven't told that W is a measurable function. But in fact, you can show that you can replace it always by equivalent function, which is continuous. Okay, so now I would like to consider this space. So let me describe some gamma G. So gamma is a circle G. G is a circle R. So I would like to explain the geometry of this space, and I would like to carefully choose these weight functions of this space. So how to think about geometry of the space. So first of all, I'm interested in geometry up to action of G, so hence I can quotient it by K. So consider space Y, which is mod G mod K, which is quotient of upper half plane by gamma. Then this picture, almost everyone knows that you have fundamental domain here. As a function w here, I will choose essentially a function quotient y. So bar, so I'll take function w naught, which is just quotient y in this picture. And then I will construct spaces L w naught to the k. So I consider Lk of x. L W naught to the k. So I consider weight W naught to the k and consider this system of spaces. So you have so this system, so normalization here, so I put here W minus 1 somewhere. It seems that I erased it. Okay, that was not very clever. Okay, so L to W, L W of X is equal to L two of X W minus one mu. So I choose it so that I have a normalization here like in Sobolev spaces, namely L zero contains L one, contains L two, and so on, contains L minus one, contains L minus 1, L minus 2, and so on. And then the space of functions of temperature of moderate growth by definition, is union of all spaces L K for all K and T, and the space of functions of rapidly decreasing functions is the intersection of all spaces L K. Rapidly decreasing. So this is, so note that so first of all, so remark is that LW is dual, naturally dual to LW minus 1 always. So it means that each of the spaces L minus K is naturally dual to the space LK. So that's as usual theory. So this space is F rapidly decreasing is a Fréchet space, the system of semi-norms, which is defined by this invariant. So I will denote rho k is norm on L k. Okay, and functions of motor groups, they don't form a Fréchet space, they form a union of Fréchet space. But that's not for our purposes, will not be very important here. In fact, every time we will work on some finite Hilbert space LK of X. Okay, so these are my spaces, and so now I can. Now I have some quantitative description. What does it mean if function is decaying? To what extent it is decaying? If it is increasing, to what extent it is increasing? It's not, now it becomes not qualitative statement, but quantitative. So you have this semi-norms rho k, which describe all this. Okay, now the main so next step is that, so this is semi-norm, and then since everywhere here you have action of g, then you can consider corresponding semi-norms which arise from derivatives of action of G. So I explained that if you have explained last lecture, if you have a representation of G in a Banach space, continuous representation, then on space of smooth vectors, you can produce semi-norms corresponding to number of derivations of G. So you know this semi-norms rho k L. So we have semi-norm rho k, which is given by integral is w k minus 1, and then I differentiate my function L times, and I see what are estimates on all the derivatives. Okay, and in terms of these semi-norms, I will now describe my space, describe all analysis. Just before this, I just will give a definition. So S of X, natural Schwarz space of X, is just space of space defined by semi-norms, by all semi-norms rho k L for all k and L. So this means that if these are smooth function x, which decay together with all the derivatives at infinity, and precisely this means that any one of these seminoids should be finite on this function. And then, as usual, the idea is that any of the spaces which we consider, you can consider as a completion of this space S of x with respect to some seminoid. Space LK is completion of this space with respect to seminoid LK. And so, okay, so now in order to prove locally finite type, I need to follow, so I will follow the different pieces of Shapira language. So the idea that function is approximated, so the fact is that smooth function on x is well approximated by its constant term. This is a general idea, very important, central in this thing, and I want now to make precise meaning of it. So what always irritated me when I tried to work with this, this doesn't make sense because constant term lives in different space. So how you can compare functions on different spaces? So I would like to explain how one does it. So one of the ideas is that so we defined our spaces on this of functions on the space X, but in fact this extremely unpleasant to compute anything in this thing, since space X is very complicated. It doesn't have any good coordinates. So if you want to write down any explicit inequality, somehow it's not clear how to do it. So this turns out this is a standard trick how you manage this. Namely, you should pass to some other space where you can do analysis. It's called Zeekr domain. So my definition of Zeekr domain will be slightly different standard definition. Essentially the same, more correct. So I had, I remind that I had space Z of B, which is gamma B quotient G. They have projection Z of B. Quotient by gamma. Now, what is the structure of this space? Let's look again. If you consider U of B mod K, then field is just gamma B quotient of H mod gamma B, which in this case essentially yields just gamma U mod H. So it means that you consider H and consider quotient of it by D mod K. So what is this is gamma B mod, yes. gamma demon page. Which in this case is the all plus minus one, which don't act in this case. So you have just gamma u mod h. So what's gamma u? Gamma u are just translations of h. So it means that the quotient will be just some kind of cylinder. In fact, that's not precisely correct picture because there is a metric on H. So if you look at metric, so if you look at behavior, then you'll see that it's not quite cylinder, it's more like some kind of horn. Because metric is the size of this circle is approximately y minus 1. Okay. So, and now Zekiel domain is the following, but nevertheless, this thing has projection on y coordinate. So let's note it. Maybe I'll do generalization later, but let's do it. So I have map, let's note it, alpha from ZB to R plus star, just coordinate y. So point Z goes to y of t. And now I will define Zekiel domain for any, if I have t positive number, then I define Zekiel domain to be the set of all z such that this function alpha of z more equal to t. So in other words, I cut this thing in this way. Okay, so now let's look, for example, from this picture. So we know where is fundamental domain of our space X. We see that if T is sufficiently small, then sigma T will contain fundamental domain of X, which means that, okay, so let me formulate this. Let me formulate it somewhere. Some new piece. So important thing which allows to do all the computations. So the idea is that sigma t is something that Zekiel domain is something very explicit. So you can do computations on it easily. And now the claim is that you can lift functions from X to Zekiel domain and do all the estimates on Zekiel domain. You don't have to do any analytic estimates, any real computations on X, because on X essentially it's impossible. So let me formulate the central result, which I definitely will not prove, but no, in this case it is well known. The continual case I will just use it, which is called reduction theory. Morphism P sigma T into X has bounded fibers, fibers of bounded size. P star of function W naught, so way W naught is said before is just essentially equal to y up to constant. And the third is when t is sufficiently small, then p sigma t into x is 1. So analytically, what does it mean? This means that I can embed, using morphism p, I can embed functions on x into functions on sigma t. And using first two statements, I can make all the analysis up to some constant I can do on this space. So, namely, on this space, I have L2 of sigma t is weight y to the k. So, this will be I can consider this thing. So, this given by norm rho k sigma t, and then this norm on space f of x will be equivalent with some specific constant, will be equivalent to the norm rho k. So in other words, instead of computing norm rho k on this space, I can compute rho k on this space. So I leave my function sigma t and compute on this space. So from now on, all computations I will do on this space, where I can use some specific coordinates, where I can actually do computations. On space X, so on space X, you, in this particular case, you can do computations by just looking at this particular fundamental domain, but it is, somehow, the moment the group becomes a little bit more complicated, it becomes really a headache to make any computation on space X. So, and the claim is that up to some specific constants, which are easy to estimate, you can replace all computations by computations in this space. Now, in this space, I already can explain what does it mean that function is approximated by a constant term. So the idea is that functions on z, I have canonical decomposition, canonical decomposition of any function into constant term and additional part, which usually is called Kasparov part, but so it is not exactly the same as Kasparov part in usual sense. F of okay, so morphism ZB also had morphism P into X, also had morphism into XB, which is essentially U mod G in this case. Mod plus minus. So here we also can take points which y coordinate is more or equal to t. And okay, so